Mini episode 1722 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1722. We've got three FDH Lounge original dignitaries coming at you here tonight. Rick Morris, along with Jason Jones and Chris Galloway. Jason Jones, of course, our senior editor, is always our ace of the NFL draft coverage every year. Draft coverage which you will be able to find in the coming days, available on the main page at fantasydrafthealth.com. Pro Football Draftology 2024. Again, with the player rankings, the top overall rankings, whatever, all of that powered by the insights of our senior editor, Jason Jones, who is part of our troika here. I will say outright, at the risk of breaking my arm, patting myself on the back, which I am wont to do, the best damn draft troika that you are going to find anywhere. And hint, hint, perhaps you'll even be able to get some insight from us as the draft is going on this year. Stay tuned for more on that, on how we may possibly be coming at you on draft night. But I'm going to bring in the guys for this. Chris Galloway has been our lead NFL analyst the last couple of years, whether it be the preseason, division-by-division breakdowns that we do, any of the stuff in season, in the off season. Chris Galloway has been right there for all of this the last couple of years. Always great to have him in. For this is a staple of our calendar every year, the three of us doing the draft coverage pre and post. Chris, great to have you back in again, buddy.
Rick, great to be here, and like you say about the lounge itself, I schedule my life around this episode.
That's right, that's right. As everybody should, and somebody else scheduling his life around this as well, Jason Jones from the FDH Western office out there in the Rocky Mountains. Jason, great to have you back in, buddy. So happy to have you here.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I always look forward to this particular program that we do. Real quick, side note, I know most of us know, we've been doing this for a while, know that you're the hardest working man in new media. But did you just say 1722?
Yep. 1722, bruv. And of course, the 152 that we did at the station, full length episodes prior to that when you guys first came on board. And funnily enough, episode 153, it took us from 2011 to 2023 to get there. We deemed it to be episode 153 last year during the NFL draft. Myself and the scout Ken Bex from firstdownscouting.com doing a live blog from my humble home last year. A live vlog, I guess you would say. A live coverage of it here. But yes, we have an insane amount of stuff out there, Jason. And again, I mentioned you being in the FDH Western office here in the Denver area here. Of course, everybody knows FDH is based off of America's North Coast, but I mentioned that for a purpose, because you are doing coverage for the Sports Illustrated franchise here via the Buffs Beat website and everything, multimedia that goes along with covering Colorado football these days. And I understand there's some breaking news you are privy to as we are recording this live to tape about the fate of one Cormani McClain.
This is one of those things that isn't the most fun part about the job. And we've known that this was headed this way for a little while, but we had to wait until we were able to actually confirm sources and report it. But yeah, the thing that most people are going to start seeing all over social media, year one, number one recruit flip of Coach Prime was Cormani McClain, who was all in for Miami. And then Deion took the job at Colorado, and then it was no time flat that he was able to flip Cormani McClain. That has not gone the way I think either party wanted it to. But like I said, we saw this coming. We knew it was a thing probably about 2 months ago. And, you know, without overstepping any bounds, it just feels like there was a chemistry issue. If I were to put my own opinion out there, I would say to anyone listening, every coach in every program has buttons to push, and I'm just not necessarily sure the button that was being pushed is the right button to push for Cormani. So after what feels like months of consideration, it looks like Cormani has made his decision to enter the portal, and it's being widely reported pretty much nationwide now.
Well, that is very interesting to see it happen. And Chris, I want to pick your brain on that a little bit because – again, looking at the way that the NFL draft class is for the year 2024, that this is the one that is the most ever as far as being defined by players that have dealt with transfer portal, NIL issues. It really seems like this year's draft class is predominated by kids that have spent the majority of their college time dealing with these types of things. And Colorado is, of course, the quintessential program dealing with the transfer portal, have been since Deion Sanders got there a year ago. And it seems like, again, a little bit maybe of you live by the portal, you die by the portal.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I mean, I think this, you know, as a draft class, this is certainly an older draft class. And I think we're going to see more of that. I think there's a lot of guys that are going to affect their future stock by moving around once or twice in their collegiate career, which may trigger them to stay a little longer than they anticipated, maybe initially when they were first recruited into college, as well as, you know, what's the effect on the NIL money start to have? You know, when are the guys that are legit, you know, second and third rounders that come out and say, you know what, I'm staying at Ohio State, or I'm staying at Michigan, or I'm staying at Florida State because I'm going to make $1 million in NIL, and I'm going to stick around one more year to see if I can, you know, improve my stock beyond what I think I might be a second or a third rounder. So, again, does that push more older players into the draft in the future if we start seeing that? So, that, I mean, we're so early into that process. It'll be interesting to watch, but you mentioned college programs living and dying by the portal. You know, our very own, and it's small potatoes comparatively, but our very own Ohio Bobcats in the last week. I mean, we lose our defensive coordinator to Memphis in the middle of spring ball.
Yeah.
Then our top nose tackle enters the portal 2 days ago. Then our senior returning wide receiver, you know, even though he came off a year of injury, Jacoby Jones has entered the portal. And I think for something like a G5 school, it's like, how the hell do you manage a program and coach like this? I mean, not only are you losing coaches, you're losing players, and you're doing it in sort of non-traditional times. I just don't know how you coach and run a program right now. It is so difficult, so difficult.
And
again, I think we're going to see another – I think we're going to see another – we get through spring ball right now, right?
Yeah.
How many quarterbacks in Division I are going to go, I'm the fourth or fifth guy at Ohio State, and I'm out of here, right?
Yeah.
How many of them are entering the portal in different places, you know, for different positions because they don't like where they're sitting in the Big Ten or the SEC? I mean, how many of these guys are going to hit the portal next week, you know, after spring ball? I think it's probably a bunch, right? I mean, so I don't know. It's very hard to operate, I think, right now as a coach trying to run a program.
Well, and then you get the things of, like, insult to injury. I mean, you're talking about our Bobcats. I mean, we lost our friggin' quarterback to Indiana. Tell me that's not a slap in the nuts. It's not even like he went to a real school or anything like that. So that's just really demoralizing when you get stuff like that happening. So, you know, in looking at this.
I think we lost three players to Indiana.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was the main one, but you're absolutely right. It was three overall. So, you know, this is the climate that these players are coming out of this year into the draft. And, again, many years the draft is defined by the caliber of quarterback play. So you go to 2 years ago when it was at a historic nadir when the Squealers stupidly spent, what was it, the 20th overall pick on Kenny Pickett, who was the first quarterback to go, something that we naysayed in real time and were proven right. This year, this is looking like a draft class that, again, is really set up in a way where you have a couple of guys who can be deemed potential stars in this draft class. You're going to have probably 4-5 guys going in the first round. It could be 6, depending on how it shakes out here. Who wants to take a slot on either the Washington or Oregon QBs here and see if they crack the first round? But in looking at this, it's going to be very interesting. I know that both of you guys are somewhat more down than the average is, more down than the medium on Caleb Williams and what he's going to do for the Bears here. Again, that has been the graveyard of quarterbacks for a long time, albeit with the exception of Justin Fields and maybe a few others. Part of the reason I think it's been the graveyard of quarterbacks is that they haven't always spent high draft picks on them. So he goes there. He's the most talented guy they've drafted in several decades, and being counted on to be the second coming of Sammy Baugh for the Monsters of the Midway. And I'll start with you, Jason, in looking at this here. I know you see him as being more reflective of the overall top quarterbacks of this class as far as having some questions about him than being separate from the rest of the class, the way that folks like myself see him, is that it's him and then everybody else. I know you see him as being more so reflective of where they are, with pluses and significant question marks.
Yeah, let me be very clear about this. Because I cover Colorado, obviously I'm watching all the Pac-12 games and getting ready to face Caleb in week 5. So I went through and watched a ton of tape, and here's my issue. And I'll start by saying I could not care any less about the stuff that is being talked about on the internet right now about him crying in the stands, painted fingernails, all that. I don't care about any of that.
Nothing. Didn't even know that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are basically taking shots at his character, and I'm not going to do that. But when we look at his tape, and the quick one is, if you just go and watch just highlights, just watch all his real appealing plays, the ones that you're going to see on SportsCenter, and then of all of those plays, count how many times that anything of that was done within the scheme of the offense, and it's less than 10%. So all his big wow moments completely come off script, where he's just running around and slinging it. My other big issue, and this is where it's going to come into play with some of the other prospects we'll talk about, is almost more than anybody else, Caleb Williams does not throw to a man. He throws to an area of grass. And while that has been very successful in college over the years, that's the kind of thing that's going to really come back to bite him if that's where most of his great production comes from. Now, where we can be proven wrong here is if he gets drafted, he goes to Chicago, and they put him in a scheme, and all of a sudden he looks like he's just as good as any system quarterback. That is a possibility, but right now, from the vantage point of talking about prospects and how set they are or how NFL-ready they are, I have concerns. Now, we can look at a number of these other players and say, I like what this guy does better, and I like what that guy does better. But to echo the initial point here, the thing I want everyone to take away from this draft class is there is not one single quarterback in here that can't miss. There's not one guy you can look at that says, okay, that's Peyton Manning or that's Andrew Luck or something. There isn't one of those guys in this draft class. So you, as the fan or the GM making decisions, got to look at this kind of like they said in draft day. What are the shortcomings, and can we live with them? So Chicago looks at it and says, yeah, we'll take all the good. We don't care that he's not, you know, pro ready, or that maybe he doesn't spend a whole lot of time under center, or he's not going to read through 4 progressions. He's going to read through 2 and run. If they live with that, then fine. But I'm just saying, as someone that's looking at draft prospects, he isn't this can't-miss, one-in-a-generation thing. And while I hate to put myself in the Merrill Hodge camp, I'm more likely to agree with Merrill Hodge than I am like the Stephen A's and the people that are just saying he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Very interesting. And again, the opinion that you guys have here, and I'm going to get Chris's specific opinion in a second, very much a clip and save, and I want to reference, because sometimes we get these clip and save moments on the show and they turn out to be very, very memorable. I go back two mini episodes, and then how we talked about it in the last mini episode. Of course, our guy, Jake Digman, with our WrestleMania subsequent preview and post show that we were doing, that was a thing where he forecast completely. It was a deal where you had a main event of Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. He had Drew McIntyre winning the match, CM Punk, who was on commentary, getting into some kind of altercation with McIntyre afterwards, costing him the title via a cash-in by Damian Priest, who runs out with the briefcase. Boom, 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 boom. That's how it goes. It goes that way right down the line. Jake Digman was correct. So first of all, I teased it off air to you, Jason. I'll give you a second to let that kind of marinate with you on how he called that whole thing start to finish on the show, and that we basically have that as part of our archives here that he did that. So just take a second to digest Jake doing that and calling his shot and making it work.
You know, it's funny because we can draw an interesting parallel here. We have done, what is it, like 18 of these now?
Right.
Draft guys and pre-shows and post-shows. And one of my favorite things that I'm like a dad on an airplane with baby pictures when this comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's an opportunity and someone wants to talk to me about the greatness of Mel Kiper or the greatness of Todd McShay, I am immediately going to remind them that Rick Morris is 50% more accurate than both of those men, and I at least am about 15 to 20% more accurate than them. If that's the benchmark that we kind of look at on whether or not someone's mock or their pre-draft prognostications actually pan out, we're still, what, on your best day, it's 70% maybe?
Yeah.
So for Jake to go into something that not only is a big production, right?
Yeah.
If we're looking at WrestleMania, Super Bowl, whatever we're comparing that to, for him to go in there and go, this, and this are going to happen just this way would be like you and me putting out a mock draft where we go 32 for 32. That's unheard of.
Yeah, that is absolutely the case. And again, what he did was absolutely out of this world. No question about it. We take our hat off to him. It can't be mentioned often enough. And so in looking at this, I want to pivot to you, Chris, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because I know from what I've seen on Facebook, you've had some of the same thoughts on Caleb Williams as Jason has had. So you're a little more similar to where he's at than me, because I'm sort of more of the conventional wisdom on him. But that I know that you see Caleb Williams as somebody that, again, like the top prospects here, has a lot of upside if everything is captured properly, but also has some downside. And again, in the case of Williams, maybe more downside than a lot of the analysts are saying right now.
I think in some ways, I mean, I do agree with a lot of what Jason said, and I feel like there's been this sort of overhype of the skills and talent. I think he has a lot of that. The actual thing, and again, like Jason, I'm not going to impugn the man's character in any way, but I will talk to the leadership aspect of one's mental breakup, their makeup, and also, you know, that mental toughness. I think that matters. And I don't know that I cared for what I saw out of Caleb Williams last year. Didn't seem like he handled a lot of adversity well mentally. Didn't seem like, you know, he was exhibiting the kind of leadership that I would want my Heisman Trophy winning. Everyone expects to be the number one pick in the NFL draft, you know, future Hall of Famer to be. Now, look, some of that can be immaturity. He's 22 years old. But, you know, I think at the NFL level, that stuff matters. It matters in a locker room, and it matters when things are difficult. And there will be difficult moments for him with a team that's getting the number one pick because, well, they got the pick, but from somebody else. But they weren't a great team.
Right.
So I know they're doing some things to improve that roster dramatically, but, you know, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to the Miami Dolphins, or he's not going to the Baltimore Ravens. he's going to a team that has struggled to put together a winner consistently for a long time. So with some internal dysfunction in recent history. So, you know, I think that that's a challenge in playing in, you know, we haven't got into the whole, like, hey, playing on the road in bad weather, you know, some of those types of factors. I just want to see more out of them. To Jason's point, there are no quarterbacks on this list that are like the can't miss.
Right.
There's no Andrew Luck. There's no, well, people consider Trevor Lawrence can't miss. Some now would even question, well, did we miss on the can't miss? So, I mean, and in some ways, the guy I like the most in this entire group is Penix, because I like that character. I like his leadership. Right. I like his toughness. I like his intelligence and decision-making. Now, the big question mark on him is how he behaves when he's under pressure, right? He struggles more. And then second, you know, the injury history is a huge red flag.
Sure.
I think if Michael Penix were you know, 2 years younger and didn't have the injury history in Indiana, we might be talking about him in that manner.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing where, as you said, there's questions about everybody coming up in here. The one thing, and I talked about this a little bit with you off air, Jason, I sort of questioned the whole, the ascent of J.J. McCarthy, the fact that he's going places in mock drafts that you never would have seen even a couple of weeks ago, you know, potentially as high as number four. Like, is this a silly season phenomenon, as I am starting to suspect? Because I'm always suspicious of anybody that rises or falls too much after the season is done. Because it just feels like we're putting aside all the things we saw at the time that slotted guys at a certain point here. And that, again, and I'm not saying that he's a workout warrior by any stretch of the imagination. He's not the type of player to be a workout warrior. But just, is it a little bit of revisionism setting in with J.J. McCarthy rocketing up the boards? I know you don't think so necessarily.
No, my thing with J.J. McCarthy, and I know there's a little bit of putting the head in the lion's mouth here, because of where he plays. But on the surface, my initial reaction during the season was he is an adequate quarterback on a stacked roster who isn't asked to do things that, say, a Caleb Williams is asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we heard Harbaugh.
Yeah.
As soon as Harbaugh left Michigan, he went on this little media tour I'm not talking about how he could be the best quarterback in the class. He could be the top guy off the board. And we all kind of went, what is Harbaugh on right now?
Mm-hmm.
And then it got me to go back and watch. And I think what's happening, and yes, silly season is absolutely on the table. However, what I think is happening here is you have a coach that's now an NFL coach who's talking up his boy. But then you also have GMs that have a tendency to focus in on things, overvalue some things and undervalue other things. And I think what's happening is it's probably a perfect storm of silly season, plus what I found out when you go back and watch the tape. While he's not dominating games, J.J. McCarthy throws into more NFL-sized windows than any of the other, say, top six or seven guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that could just be a byproduct of the system they run, whatever it is, but Caleb throws guys open. The buzz term people like to say, he's throwing to a space and the receivers are going to it. Penix will hit a guy that's essentially wide open, meaning there's no defender within, say, 3 to 5 yards of him. And all that's great, but then you see McCarthy in the red zone and he'll fit it into a tight end where the window is maybe 18 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to think that that's got to be a big part of it, is that GMs and these draft people that are flying him up the boards is probably a combination of those two things. Now, that being said, there's also a little sort of draft order math happening.
Uh-huh.
I don't think anybody is taking J.J. ahead of Caleb, Drake May, or the kid at LSU.
Oh, Daniels. Daniels.
Yeah. He's not getting above that, right? So those three are coming off.
Right.
And then it becomes a question of, are we looking at teams that, yes, need a quarterback, but maybe they're looking at Brock Bowers, tight end. Maybe they're looking at an offensive lineman. And they'll just reach on the guy because they know that they don't love what the crop looks like in the second round.
Sure.
But no, I don't think that J.J. McCarthy is legitimately like a top 3-4 quarterback, all things considered. I think people are just falling in love with certain factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. What do you think when you look at this, Chris? A little bit of silly season as far as him skyrocketing up the board or something else at play?
Well, I think he's the guy most likely to slip a little. And by that, I mean, you know, sort of into that 10 to 12 range.
Mm-hmm.
Because to your point, is everybody really in love with him the way they want us all to believe they are?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've heard stuff that said that the rest of us relate to the game, that NFL scouts and front offices were in love with him, you know, in October. And mm-hmm. the rest of us are just playing catch up.
Uh-huh.
So I guess that's possible. I, as a beholder, I think to Jason's point, look, these picks always come down to one or two features of a player, right, that they like.
Right.
You know, with McCarthy, do we get into the hand size? Oh, no. Oh, right. You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that he is the fourth quarterback off the board. I do think that he has the possibility, if somebody doesn't come up like the Giants into that four slot, that he's the guy that might fall back to somebody like the Vikings or something if they try to be patient and see if everybody else is bluffing.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are certain systems and situations that would benefit a guy like McCarthy better, right? Playing indoors, for example, seems to fit his game better. You know, we just saw him like the bowl games and the Natty and other things like that. I think something like the Vikings might be a great fit for him. So I to your point, it is silly season. There's always somebody talked up that they're convincing us is going to move up the board, and then, you know, maybe doesn't. When it's all said and done, and he certainly feels like the guy that we could see in that 10 to 12 range instead of number 3 or number 4.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised, because I think that would be a sign of sanity kind of setting back in, if that were to be the case. Yeah.
One thing I do want to just add, we're absolutely all on the same page here.
Mm-hmm.
No one is talking about JJ being even like a top 5 pick. Question is, does he go 5 or 6, or does he go 10 to 12? And that seems to be basically the range. What I don't want people to take away from this is that we are suggesting that J.J. McCarthy is, you know, the next, like, number 2 pick who's going to fall on his face. No, he's not going to go 2. He's not going to go 3 or 4. But that 5-6 and then 10-12 range is very much in play. And if it all falls apart, he's still going before 20. So the question really is, like, where in there does he fit? And while some people are saying he's closer to the 4-5, I think Galloway and myself are both kind of in the, yeah, that 10-12 range is really the sweet spot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm seeing some mocks that have him going as high as 4, which I think is absolutely outrageous.
That's crazy.
It is. It's
now, because I know that we are all of a like mind, have come up rooting for Ohio State, have family or whatever it is that ties us to Ohio State.
Well, not Chris.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I have every ability to have not scarlet covered colored glasses. For fantastic. Even with that said, though, is there any reality at all where J.J. McCarthy goes ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. in the large scope of everybody on the board? And I think the answer has to be an emphatic no.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
there's no way he's going 4. Okay. You say no chance. I'm not buying into no chance. This is a league that knows you have got to have quarterbacks, and it only takes one team to fall in love with a guy and convince themselves. So I'm not prepared to say no chance.
Yeah.
Well, okay, if we introduce someone can trade up and get him, I buy that. But the idea that Arizona is taking J.J. McCarthy, I don't buy that for a second. No, they absolutely are not. And they will take Marvin Harrison if they stick around at 4. I mean, but I've seen a couple of mocks that have McCarthy going to the Patriots at 3, which I find insane.
That's insanity.
But
I don't know what that new regime is all about, right? There's still a defensive-oriented staff in New England, and they have a guy in Elliot Wolf, who I, of course, if you recall, was not a fan of when he was with the Browns in his down-the-ladder capacity. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to, I think they're a bit of a mystery. Well, that said, if there's any sanity in the world, Jason's spot on. His sweet spot is in that 10 to 12 range is where you would expect J.J. McCarthy to go. And certainly, if there's justice in the world, Marvin Harrison Jr. goes before him.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of these things where the Patriots, again, same team that talked themselves into Mac Jones in the middle of the first round. So all things are possible as far as them making a horrible decision at quarterback. But yeah, Marvin Harrison absolutely should be the first non-quarterback off the board, heading up yet another great wide receiving class. We went a long time without that being the case, but 10 years ago, 2014, that was a big-time class, even though the guy that we all thought was the biggest gimme in the whole draft class, Sammy Watkins, has never even become a star player. This time around, it should be different because Marvin Harrison Jr., again, from the genes to the physical ability all the way on down, the biggest sure thing to come out at wide receiver in many years. Some would say perhaps since even Megatron. But looking at this also, too, Jason, to give a little bit of a sneak preview for Pro Football Draftology 2024 to be available on the main page on FantasyDraftHelp.com within days of when this goes up. Rome Odunze being number two. I'm a big fan of you putting him there because I'm a big fan of that guy. I think he is the second best wide receiving prospect with all due respect to Malik Nabers. And you go on down the line here. I know you're a proponent also of Xavier Worthy and some of the other guys in here. So it's an excellent wide receiving class, much along the lines of what we've been getting for the better part of the last decade. We are living in the golden era of wide receiver classes, and this year is no different.
Yeah, and it's not going to change anytime soon either. The Rome Odunze is a take that's sort of the hill I'm willing to die on. I absolutely agree. I think he is without question. If Marvin Harrison isn't in the fold, I think he's the number one. He's the closest thing to a typical NFL prototype. Now, Nabers is quick and shifty and is going to make plays in space, and that's great. But if I'm looking at him in a vacuum side by side, there's just so much that I like about Rome that I just had to have him above Nabers. And then, for me, that's kind of where the tier break is after those three. And then, really, the next few, you can't really – there's not a bad pick over the next few. Xavier Worthy I like. I just wish he ran just a little faster because he looks like he plays a little faster. Keon Coleman's nice. Leggett is a really intriguing prospect at 6'4 with some speed. Mitchell in Texas, I really like what Texas is doing as far as prospects go. They seem to have a few spots where they have, two wide receivers and two defensive tackles and a linebacker. So Texas has got some nice contributions. This one hurts me to say, and this is getting into my bias, I really don't like Oregon, just on a personal level. So I don't like saying nice things about Oregon. But Troy Franklin, he was a guy, when they played Colorado, it was just like, good grief, what do we got to do to stop this guy? So I really like his ability to just get open and utilize his quickness. And then, of course, the one I'm sort of filibustering here to get to is the guy that I was hoping would actually go higher than I now think he will go. But that's Xavier Weaver. He was the number one receiver for Shedeur Sanders in Colorado. He does pretty much everything really well, just doesn't have that elite level on anything. So he will most likely be late day two, day three kind of guy. But at, 6 foot, quick, shifty, runs clean routes, has good hands. If you're just looking at things, he's one of those guys you kind of like. I just think there's too many guys ahead of him, and the way the draft will fall, obviously we're going to talk about D tackles and linebackers and corners and offensive linemen, and at some point these guys start to slide. So while I really like him, I think he's a great kid. I've talked to him a bunch of times. We even had a thing on the field where, like, I'd walk on the field and be like, hey, we get 200 a day? You know, and so he's a good kid. And I really hope he finds a good landing spot. I think in a year or two or three, he could be very productive. But as far as draft prospects, I can't get crazy on the Colorado stuff till next year. And then another name that really is getting talked about, I just think we're being a little too harsh on the kid, and that's Brendan Rice. Everyone's kind of got him as like a late day two, day three kind of guy. And while I don't disagree with that, I think that he's a pick you look at and say, kind of like Marvin Harrison, but the diet version. You're like, there's so many things I like about the makeup of this kid that you can't look at him like he's just what you see. He's going to become probably a better pro than he was a college player, which is what you want. But yeah, whether it's this year, last year, next year, wide receiver is going to be the sweet spot for quite a while. And next year is going to be filthy. And if I may insert my Colorado bias here, there's going to be some GMs that got to make a very important decision about one player in particular. And I'm here to tell all of them and anybody listening, if you are in the camp that Travis Hunter has to play wide receiver or cornerback, you are failing yourself and you do not know what you're looking at. But he's just the top of the list. We're going to have a number of guys, 10, 15, 20 guys next year that you look at and go, all of them look like future NFL players.
Yeah, and again, Shohei Ohtani has proven that you can go on both sides of the ball, right? So that's a thing where now hopefully the gentleman from Colorado doesn't have the same gambling type issues as Shohei Ohtani.
There it is.
There it is, allegedly.
There's no way Rick is dropping Ohtani and just leaving it at that.
Yeah, exactly. You saw that Ephus ball coming towards the plate at 45 miles an hour. But, yes, that was there for a reason. And, again, this wide receiver class, you even look at guys like Ladd McConkey out of Georgia, who, again, would be going much higher. I think we're the class not as deep as it is, so... Chris, again, this is something that you and I have talked about extensively here, the fact that we are in the golden age of wide receivers in the NFL, and this is just going to be one more incredible influx to what we've got.
Well, it's really a function of seven-on-seven football,
mm-hmm.
Quarterback camps. These kids are young. They're developing early with these quarterbacks and these wide-open passing systems. We're just right now at a much younger age developing wide receivers in a way we never have in history. And so to Jason's point, next year, I love this class this year. It's deep. Next year is going to be outstanding as well. I haven't bothered to get beyond some of the high points of next year, but, you know, I'm sure there's not going to be a drop off. Most of this draft, I don't really feel like this is a very deep draft overall. You know, it seems like the real value is, you know, through rounds five, and I don't really like much after that, except for wide receiver. I do love this wide receiver class. It's deep and it's a mile wide. And so, to your point, I mean, there's guys out there that there's all these traits you love about them. And again, coming out of college, you know, everybody's got a question mark, right? You know, I mean, Xavier Worthy, it's some of the drops. Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, it's the age. You know, are you a team that has guardrails on age like we believe the Browns do? Because he's a guy that I would love to see the Browns go and grab in that second round if he's on the board, because I think he's exactly the kind of wide receiver the Browns lack. The sort of do anything, get open at all costs, and win the football at the point of catch. I love that kid. I think he's going to be a real stud in the NFL. You know, everything else aside, I have Harrison number one, but I got to tell you, I love Rome Odunze, but I've got Malik Nabers slightly ahead of him. Just because of speed and hand size, and when you get to the NFL with a larger ball, I am a believer in hand size on catching, and when you combine that with his separation and route running and his speed, I think Nabers is going to be a real star. Shit, I mean, his teammate Brian Thomas is half a step behind. Those two guys Speed-wise, Thomas is faster. But, you know, those two guys are both going to be stars, I think. LSU, you know, with two more in the league. Keon Coleman out of Florida State, another guy I really do like. Although his hands are a little small, that would be one of those concerns for me. But there's guys, you know, even North Carolina's kid, the transfer from Kent State, you know, Devontae Walker, you know, he only got like part of a season in Chapel Hill playing with May. He missed camp because of all that arguing with the NCAA over whether he could transfer and be eligible and everything. But you look at his intangibles, you know, for a guy like Walker, I mean, you know, his size, his speed. I mean, you know, he ran a 4.36. You know, I don't know. I think a guy like that with a long arm, we got longer than average arms. That's a guy that, you know, could go third round and really become a star. Little concerns on drops. We saw, I think, in the Senior Bowl with him, like, you know, hey, you might want to catch a ball this week. So I am reminded of some of those Tar Heel receivers in the past that suddenly forgot how to catch a
Greg
ball.
Little.
But he certainly he didn't see it right. Greg Little, exactly right. Bingo, you knew exactly who I was referring to.
Yes.
Mr. Hands of Stone. But, you know, the thing about it is, like, a lot like Walker, Little didn't have drop issues in college, right? Neither did Walker. And they got, and, you know, Little got in the pros and couldn't catch a thing. So, what happens there, I don't know. But, yeah, I love this. I love this class. I think there's guys up and down the list who could, really end up making a name for themselves, especially if they end up in the right. In the right system, with the right coaching. So, I'm a big, I like Neighbors and I like Thomas. I like the two LSU kids, a lot. And then obviously for our Browns, Pearsall is a favorite of mine. I think he's exactly the kind of thing that we're missing, on that Browns receiving core. That obviously would mean you'd have to, he's a slot guy. The Browns would have to make a hard decision on Moore and Bell. And probably have to, it'd be a numbers thing. One of those guys would have to be gone if you were going to have Pearsall draft him and put him on the roster. That remains to be seen, but he's a guy I really like.
Well, a guy that they're not going to take because they wouldn't have the need for it. This is a draft where you have a real standout tight end in Brack Bowers, the likes of which you don't often see in the drafts here. So what I want to do is I want to talk best of the rest offensively here at the different positions. Offensive tackle, this is an outstanding draft in that. The two guys that are going to be going in the top 10, Olu and Alt, respectively, from Penn State and Notre Dame. You've got them really factoring in there. Again, a draft that is really, really, really strong at offensive tackle. Pretty good at tight end and center and guard. Running back, that position exists basically. So, Jason, your thoughts on anybody outside of the positions we've talked about thus far, quarterback and wide receiver on the offensive side of the ball. There are some studs in here, and again, a lot of them I think at tackle, and then some at some of the other positions here, with the possible exception of running back, which kind of is what it is in my estimation.
Yeah, running back is interesting, especially this year, because it's not like there aren't backs that we don't like. There just aren't backs that feel like game changers, which is pretty much the only thing that gets a running back in the top 15.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I do have one name that I'm absolutely in love with, and probably for all the wrong reasons, and that is Audric. What's his name? Audric Estime.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
From Notre Dame, 5'11", almost 230, real aggressive runner, one cut downhill, no nonsense. If I'm to put on the Browns fan hat, I would love to find that he is there in the third. I don't think that he will be, but that's a scenario that I could say, okay, I like it. I don't love it. But he's like, after Corum, he's the only running back that really impresses me. Benson and Brooks will do well. I like Bucky Irving, but not that high. And then when we get to offensive line, before I get there, tight end. Brock Bowers could be like the best tight end prospect in 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, he's that good at literally. What I was saying about Weaver, it's the opposite with Brockers. He is great at everything. My problem is if you can't get him, I think you're waiting till like the third round to even consider tight end.
Right.
So there's nobody outside of him that really blows me away. Now, if we're looking for sleepers late, a guy that I really like, and again, this is biased because I watched him play live and in person on the field, but that is Dallin Holker from Colorado State.
I knew you were going to say him. I knew it.
He's got kind of like this big Dallas Clark vibe to him. Like, he almost looks like he could just be a big receiver, or he could be a tight end, but also there have been some times in games where you watch him block and you go, good grief. So I like him, but I don't think that he's complete enough to have a conversation of him going in the top 50. So those are really the high points for me on tight end. I didn't see anybody that really wowed me that much. But when we look at offensive line, this is going to follow a very typical thing. You're going to have two or three guys that are pretty much unquestioned first-round guys. And the third of which, inserting bias again, is Fatanu from Washington. And that's just, when you watch Washington, he's just really solid. I don't know that there's anything, there's no Joe Thomas in him. There's no Trent Williams in him. But you look at him, like, he's a very solid guy. And if you need somebody late first round, early second round, and he's still there, you got to be pretty excited. But even as we go a little further, you know, offensive tackles going 12, 13 deep, where you can look at a guy and say, with the right development, this could, you know, parlay into a starting offensive tackle in the NFL. Guards a little bit more dicey, as it typically is, but I think the floor is longer, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I think you could be looking at guards in the fourth and fifth round and still get good guys.
Yeah.
So I definitely do like the offensive line just in general. There are a couple of centers that are really nice, and then the bottom falls out. But by and large, if you're a team that needs an offensive lineman, you look at this draft class, and you do not feel like you have to get that guy in the top 10.
Right.
If you're there, fantastic. Get the guy you want. If you're not there, you're going to find out later that some guys are going to fall to you that you probably didn't think were, or there'll be guys that you think you can work with.
Yeah. Well, I think that in looking at this, you've identified some very interesting potential sleepers there at the different positions. And again, in turning to you, Chris, a couple of the top guys that you're looking at here, you know, as far as top 10 possibilities at the positions outside of quarterback and wide receiver offensively, Fashanu and Alt. And, you know, you've also got Brock Bowers in there, whose game, I would say, gives up as much smoke as Cameron Brink on draft night. But what are some of the things that you're looking at, Chris, with some of the players at the other positions offensively in the first couple of rounds?
I'll start off with tight end. Jason did a nice dive there. A couple of the names I really do like. I thought, he went Holker, and I agree, he's kind of a late-round sleeper. But Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State is another guy that I think is sort of that fourth round, you might find yourself a gem. And then is Jaheim Bell out of Florida State, another guy, maybe like a fifth rounder. I really like, I like what he has in terms of some skill sets and size. I think those two guys could be interesting tight ends late. Bowers is going to go, top 12. And then to Jason's point, probably not going to see another tight end till like the third round. You know, as far as running backs go, Rick, if you're like, well, there's running backs. I really like Trey Benson a lot, but he's probably not going until the third round. Maybe somebody jumps up into the late second round and grabs him. I think a guy like Blake Corum could, sort of be that poor man's McCaffrey, like in San Francisco.
Okay.
I think he has those sort of tendencies. And, a guy like a Will Shipley out of Clemson, could be a fourth or fifth rounder that you could end up, getting some real good service out of for 4 or 5 years. So, there's some guys there that can certainly play. And, a few names to keep an eye out for. Even a guy like Frank Gore Jr., right? his father was an Iron Man, you know, and people kind of have him as a, you know, a late, maybe a seventh rounder, an undrafted free agent. So there's some talent out there, but a lot of it is admittedly somewhat interchangeable. And to your point, there is some good talent on offensive line, especially at the offensive tackle position this year. It's deep. And, I mean, the first guy off the board is going to be Joe Aul. I think we all know the Titans are going to pick him. They seem like they are locked in to take Aul. And I can understand why, right? Like, he's not Joe Thomas, but he's a guy that's going to be a top, you know, he's going to be a top, you know, he's going to be like the 14th, 15th best tackle in the league and totally serviceable for, you know, eight years or so. And so why wouldn't you take that guy? You need to protect your quarterback assets, and you won't go wrong with him. I wouldn't be shocked when we talk about the Browns. Everyone's kind of looking at defensive tackle and all these other things, wide receiver. Don't be shocked if the Browns go offensive tackle with that first pick. I know that, you know, they just shipped one off, Watson, to the Titans, ironically. You know, they're going to have to do something with that right tackle situation. I don't care what they say. There's no way they can believe in Jed Wills at this point. I know they picked up the option. We got him again this year. But he hasn't shown us enough. So don't be shocked if the Browns in the second or third round don't go and pick up a tackle like the kid out of Yale, you know, maybe, you know, somebody like, you know, Guyton out of Oklahoma, if he was still around in the second round, certainly the kid out of the BYU, if he was around in the second round. So I, you know, there's some real options there, and somebody like the Browns could go in that kind of direction, just from a depth standpoint. I haven't really honestly studied the center positions all that much. I know, you know, there's a couple top guys there in the kid out of Duke and the kid out of Oregon. I think there's a couple guys that can go, that's like a first and a second round. And then, you know, you're looking at kind of like a center every round, I think, kind of class. And so if you're not getting one of those top couple, there's probably not a lot there worth drafting versus just waiting out for an undrafted free agent. So anyway, there's some good talent there. And, you know, the guards, again, I think the guard positions is there's a handful in that sort of second, third round. You know, the kid out of Washington, what's that, Fontenot, he's a first rounder. Everybody else is kind of a second round, third round. And so there's not, I don't think, quite the talent at the guard level that there is at the tackle level this year. So that'll play out differently as the draft rolls along. But, you know, look, like I said, I think this is a draft that's a little top heavy mostly. And then, you know, you're really, and the depth isn't there in a lot of positions like guard and center. And I think you're really going to have to rely heavily on your scouts in those late rounds.
Yeah, I think so. And a couple things that you said there. One, I will forego the low-hanging fruit of the joke that the Browns traded the wrong Watson, but I will go back to something else that you said here when you made some kind of even potential comparison with Blake Corum to Christian McCaffrey, and I will make a reference that FDH Lounge dignitary John Adams will certainly pop for when he listens to this, and that is that looking at Blake Corum's reported time of a 4.55 in the 40, I would say Christian McCaffrey could beat that, Chris, if he was wearing a pair of Christian Louboutins to run his 40.
I think Corum's the guy that plays faster than what you saw in that tape on his 40 time.
Okay.
We see guys like that all the time.
All right.
You know, so, I mean, we'll see. I said poor man's.
Okay.
And he said, right. I said it in a way of his ability to do different things.
Okay. All right. So that 4.55 40, in other words, you're saying is fake news. So, okay. Runs faster than that.
Hey, Emmitt Smith ran a 4.5. So, you know, listen, there's plenty of guys out there that can run a 4.5 and still do really well in this league.
Yeah, well, I could have cut the career.
Didn't our beloved Nick, didn't Nick Chubb run like a 4.46 or something? It wasn't like he was that fast.
He's also
not he gets out into an open field and suddenly guys just don't seem to be able to catch him.
Chris, he's also not 5'8 like Blake Corum, though, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
So, I understand.
If you're a short guy and you're not all that fast, it's kind of like, you know, what are you doing here? But I think he could
be... Well, I mean, you could be the all-time leading rusher in the NFL like Emmitt Smith, short and slow, according to you.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, any one of us could have run for those yards behind that offensive line. Let's be perfectly blunt about this. You know, the fact that some people think he was better than Barry Sanders just shows you how many stupid people there are in this world. But as far as it goes here, defensively, we're looking at a thing where a little bit top-heavy positionally, I would say. Defensive end, cornerback, outstanding depth and, you know, top-end talent at those positions here. Good positions, I would say. You're looking at probably defensive tackle, safety. I've got the outside linebackers as being kind of average overall, inside linebackers being kind of poor, but it's kind of rare to get a great inside linebacker class anyways. So I'll turn to you for the defensive side of the ball, Jason, of who are some of the guys that are really jumping out at you this year?
Okay. So, yeah, I agree completely where it's top heavy and where the concentration of talent is. Specifically, if we start at on the line, you know, we're going to see a few guys go early. Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Leitu Latu from UCLA. But then, again, you're still going to have really quality prospects in that second round. Now, we get the defensive tackles even more top-heavy. I like maybe the top three or four a lot. And then it starts to wane ever so slightly, but still there's value there. Nose tackle, not a great draft for that. Hopefully, your team doesn't need a big two-gap plug in the middle because this just may not be the year for that. What scares me a little bit with the linebackers is you see this a lot where these people will say, this guy is like an elite 4-3 end, but he could also be a very serviceable 3-4 outside linebacker. We start to get into that whole scheme situation. Half the linebackers of note are actually linemen. So, again, I don't know that linebacker is an area you want to have a need right now, because if you do, you're going to have to get somebody at the top and probably a hybrid. Now, where this gets really interesting is I also agree that corner is just filthy. There's so much talent in corner, and I think that may end up being a byproduct of what we're seeing with the wide receivers. Same concept. These young kids, when they're coming through the ranks, you know, they coaches are telling them, like, you're tall enough to be a receiver, but you could be really great at corner. And now we're starting to see sort of the cream rise to the top on both of those, since they basically work against each other. Where this gets interesting, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention it, is the probably consensus top five cornerback, but probably number one safety. And it just feels humorous to say. Cooper DeJong from Iowa might be the first cornerback off the board, which mm-hmm. hasn't happened since, what, Seahorn?
Yeah.
And I don't want to make, like, a race joke, but, like, when was the last time there was a really good white corner that you heard of? And it's just a random thought, but, like, I couldn't tell you the last time I saw somebody this high on a draft board that just so happened to have that characteristic.
Well, Jason, rumor has it that Angie Harmon is back on the market. Is he going to marry her like Jason Seahorn did?
I think Rick is does Ms. Harmon have a daughter that would fit? There we go.
Yes.
I think she's old enough to be his mama, so I don't think that's quite going to work that way.
Fair enough.
now, circling back around, you know, not putting a round on it, but just saying, let's say in the top 50, I mean, there are 10 to 12 corners that are in that conversation. Maybe only three or four safeties, but as far as corner goes, if you're one of those teams like a Cleveland Browns where you don't have a first-round pick and that's what you need, and you're worried that, you know, it's going to get overpicked by the time it comes to you. That may not be the case. Uh-huh. You might be looking at like the fifth or sixth best corner, but you may also, in that same thought, think that's a guy that I project as being a starter. And maybe not right away, but sooner rather than later. So, again, defensive back, it may not be a wealth of riches, but there's plenty of talent there. And we could be looking at third, fourth round and still be drafting potential starters at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's a lot of talent, like you said, particularly, you know, cornerback is, you know, super strong to be sure. And again, Chris, you know, as noted previously, cornerback and defensive end, you know, the edge rushers, you got a lot of them and you got a lot of great ones in this draft here. But again, you know, to your point that you keep making, that the depth at some of the other positions, maybe not as great here. So in this draft, and this has been, I think, one of the recurring themes of our discussion as we're recording this live to tape here tonight, is that you got to get your explosive players where you can get them. And you, at most positions, you can't count on waiting to get somebody third, fourth, fifth, sixth round.
No, that's right. And I think to piggyback on what Jason was just talking about with the cornerbacks, I mean, I can guarantee you that Andrew Berry is eyeing a guy like Cameron Richardson out of Mississippi State, who most people think is a fourth or fifth round prospect. And I think he's looking at him and he's saying, that's a guy that I could turn into a starter really quick. So, you know, and he might be considered, you know, in general, the 14th or 15th best corner in this draft. To me, the number one corner is Kenyon Mitchell out of Toledo. I love his game. I love his size, his height, his speed. You know, his wingspan is good enough at 31 inches, or his arms rather. His wingspan is 75, almost 76, pretty decent. He's not yet 23, so he's a little on the older side, but I think he should be the first corner off the board. And I would take him over the kid out of Alabama, Arnold. So there is a lot of depth there at the corner position. I do agree defensively overall. I mean, D tackle seems to be pretty good this year. And if you're a team that wants to build in the trenches, this is a draft to do it, you know, at tackle and at offensive and defensive tackle. So you might see a lot of teams, Chargers do that kind of thing. I suspect that that's the approach Harbaugh will take. Watch for them potentially to trade down, get more picks, draft in the trenches. I think that's where he's going to want to start. You know, to that point, you've got some talent there. D tackle, Murphy out of Texas, you know, Chris Jenkins out of Michigan, Mike Hall Jr. out of Ohio State. A little undersized, but you know, could be a guy that goes late second, early third. Guy I really like, Mason Smith out of LSU. He's a guy I can't quite figure out. I could see him going late first, or I could see him going early third. He's got a bit of a range to him. So there's, you know, you got a guy like Sweat from Texas who's dropping like a rock because of character issues and drinking, and you got to wonder about those things, you know. But, you know, there's talent there. Jordan Jefferson, another LSU guy. And then a guy I really like that I don't know how scouts feel about him, but Miles Murphy out of North Carolina, I think he's a guy that you could get sixth round, fifth round maybe, and end up with a guy that could be a rotation guy. So, you know, I think there's some possibilities, some nice pieces available in the tackle position. And then, you know, the safety position, you know, there's some depth there. It's not as, you know, in my opinion, as, you know, as deep as some past years. I think most of these guys truly grayed out in the top of the board in the second, third round. I don't think there's any first round safeties.
No.
But you could see a run on them mid second round, I think, on a few of them in that late sort of second round. You could see four or five go, because I think there's some guys in there that fit that range. But, you know, I think the safeties are mostly going to be, you know, sort of fourth round kind of talent this go around. Again, not bad players, but they're just not going to be any stars in that class of safeties. And then linebackers, I don't even really want to talk about linebackers. I don't really like this class at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even out of place. I mean, there's a couple guys I like, Jeremiah Trotter out of Clemson. But again, you're getting a guy like that in the fourth round. You know, there's some intriguing pieces, but again, they're going to be later that you might want to take a flyer on. But there's, other than a guy like Edgerrin Cooper at a Texas A&M who has some really intriguing upside, you're not taking him first round. He's late second round type of pick. So again, linebackers, it's not very deep. There's not a lot, you know, it's mid round type selections, I think, you know, so it's not going to be a premium pick. And look, teams are starting to devalue linebacker like they do running back. So, you know, what's the future of that position? You know, that certainly remains to be seen. You know, the edge rushers, look, I'm not as high on some of these edge guys as others are in this class. I don't think there's any real great elite guys. And I mean that even like Dallas Turner, you know, or a guy like Latu out of UCLA.
Or Jared Verse? He's not elite?
I think Verse is elite. And I mean, they're going to go first round. There's elite in my mind, and then there's elite that I look at like and say, that guy is going to be outstanding. Now, hey, did any of us guess that a guy like TJ Watt was going to be? No. Right, but I this class isn't doing a lot for me. Time will tell.
Okay, well, you know, when you look at again some of the positions in the draft that aren't as thin, again, as we've said, cornerback being one of them, the fact that and this looks like a little bit of silly season to me, the fact that I'm seeing Kool-Aid McKinstry potentially sliding to the second round, that just shows you the incredible depth of that draft class for a guy that I was consistently seeing top 10, top 15 overall for much of the last year. And again, if he goes in that range, it should still surprise nobody because of what he can bring to bear. So I'll start bringing this all the way around with you, Jason, just to see any other thoughts, any notes that you have on anything that we didn't cover yet about the draft class of 2024.
Yeah, I just want to circle back to one thing in particular. Chris may have been a little light on this one. Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, if we were to do this as like with tiers in it, it would be him, a big tier break, and then everybody else.
Okay.
There are still people that are talking about Terrion Arnold from Alabama and the like 1A and 1B. I actually think it's going to be the kid from Toledo will go first, and then not like a whole round, but there will be a few picks before we even see another corner. So I absolutely love his game. And to Chris's point on the pass rushers, I'm again lockstep. I think I may be a little higher on Turner, but we'll see, because if last year was any indication, if you recall last year's hot take is that the guy that went two or three, technically I guess it was
Will Anderson.
Yeah,
Will Anderson. I have a problem with drafting a guy who is a hand-in-the-dirt player on the line when he is under 250 pounds. So, Dallas Turner, I have some concerns, but Will turned out okay. I still think he got overdrafted, but he was productive. And then Verse. I think Verse is it as far as that tier. But if we take a step back, zoom out a little bit, is there a Myles Garrett or someone like that? And I think the answer is no. I think if you're looking at a guy that in 3 years you're going to be talking about him as, like, in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year, flirting with 20 sacks a season, no, absolutely not. And I think that's the beauty.
And that's what I meant by there's elite and then there's elite with a capital E. I mean,
what?
And I don't see – there's no capital E elite guy on these edge rushers this year.
Right, but I think that's the beauty of this draft is if a GM goes in and says, it's not like I've got five guys I got to have – and you just kind of let the draft come to you, I think you're going to find that even in the second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever, you're going to see guys, and Kool-Aid is a great example, where you go, how is he still on the board?
And it's just because teams need different things, and there's the position groups, some of them are deeper than others, and you're going to see guys that you just don't expect to be there. So I actually think that's the beauty of this draft, is you don't go in with the expectation that there is an Andrew Luck and there is a Miles Garrett or there's an Aaron Donald. We don't have those, but this could be one of those drafts where the fourth or fifth best player to a given position group ends up being a very productive player, regardless of where you got him. So, you know, you have to kind of look at what the draft is and then kind of attack it that way. Because if you go in thinking that there's this can't miss guy that isn't Marvin Harrison Jr. or one of these quarterbacks or Joe Alt, then you'll be fine. The key in this particular draft is not to overvalue things and realize that there's value to be had later.
Yeah.
I think to your point, Jason, this is a draft. If you're a GM, your eyeball has to be on, I am drafting in this thing good, serviceable depth for my roster. This is a draft in that second to fifth rounds that I can get some really good professional football players that add some really nice depth to my roster that I need to be successful. I think that's the way to approach this. To your point, there's not a lot of guys that, even like we're talking about our question marks on the quarterbacks, you know, there's not a lot of guys on here that were like, boy, that's can't miss at any of these positions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than maybe the wide receivers that we've talked about at the top of that board, that sort of top 10, I think there's a lot of question marks all over the place, but there are good football players in this draft at every round that can be had. And if you're not going to overdraft or reach, you can do really well in terms of building depth for your roster.
That's what you need. And in a word that Jason used a second ago here, it has always been the word most associated with fantasydrafthelp.com, and that is value. And again, in a draft like this one, all the more so, that's what you got to do, because you have a handful of positions that are going to predominate in this draft: wide receiver, offensive tackle, defensive end, cornerback. Again, a lot of quarterbacks who can be very good, but just about all of whom have decent questions attached to them. But you start getting to the other positions, and again, you got to get your picks pretty high to be able to make them count, if you want to be able to assure yourself of getting somebody that can be somebody that can upgrade a position substantially on your roster. So, very much appreciated from both of you guys. Jason Jones, Chris Galloway, our all-star dignitaries here. What do you got, Jason?
Yeah, just one last thing. I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't say this.
Go ahead.
It's not a guy that's going to be really high on a bunch of boards.
Okay.
But it is the bias I have, because I was able to watch him up close. We've had conversations. And that name is Jordan Dominick. He's technically listed as a defensive end. 6'3", 250. Not great speed. At least not measured great speed. But he's one of these guys that I would implore GMs to take a serious look at. Now, I can't begin to tell you where I think he'll get drafted. If he gets drafted, it'll probably be on day three. And that has to do with more about Colorado's season than it does him as an individual. He's one of these guys, though, that could be a very productive player. And if he doesn't make it in a long football career, this guy's got a future talking about it. So, Jordan Dominick, if anyone's looking for a name to track that maybe is a late pick, just based on the way the board seemed to be looking, Jordan Dominick's one of those, kind of like a Nick Chubb guy, that you want one of these guys in your locker room, and he's the kind of guy that teams will rave about as an individual. That being said, Colorado going 4-8 probably didn't help any Colorado Buffalo draft stock. But just a name I want people to be aware of.
Interesting. Something for people to keep in mind.
And Rick,
mm-hmm.
It's not going to be a draft show if I don't annoy Jason with the Homer Bobcat pick.
Okay.
We almost made it.
Nope, not going to do it. I'm not letting you get away. I don't think he gets drafted. Maybe seventh round or something if he does. But if he doesn't get drafted, I want to implore Andrew Berry to sign him as an undrafted free agent. Sam Wiglis, formerly of the Ohio State University, late of Ohio University, participated in the Ohio State Pro Day, a Brecksville Broadview Heights B, where he played his high school ball, a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan. His parents are sweet and wonderful, sat with next to them at the San Diego State game. Great kid, great possession receiver. You know, he's the kind of kid you want in your locker room, to what Jason just said. We know that from the Ohio State guys. Those guys are all going to the NFL, and they love Sam Wiglis. They would repeatedly talk about how he was one of the hardest practicing, best guys in that room. The coaches loved him. The players loved him. So much so that when Ohio State wasn't playing, they would come down on action games, and those receivers would come down to Athens and watch Sam play. So Andrew Berry, if someone doesn't take him in the seventh round, sign him as an undrafted free agent. Let the kid have a shot at his dream of playing for the Browns.
Well, may I say, it's very heartwarming to always have time on a draft show here to put over somebody from the Harvard on the Hocking. And that takes me back to, I'll bring this thing all the way around here tonight with a memory from the old Sports Talk Network circa 2006 or so, doing a show with Jason. We're talking about the Browns, and Jason asks me who my favorite player on the Browns was presently. And to the answer that I gave him, Jason exasperatedly came back at me with, "You can't say the punter just because he went to your school."
So, in fact, you can.
Yeah.
And on that team, Dave Zastel might have been the best player and worthy of that choice.
Very possibly, yes. Thinking back to that era of the Browns, no question about it. So, but again,
side note: yeah. My first public player interview ever, Zastel.
Okay. Well, there you go.
For whatever it's worth.
Getting to interview a class young man there, definitely. But that
well,
takes us there.
And not so young anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, true.
And he's living back in Cleveland in Bay Village, or where, you know, on that west side. So he's come home, and he remains a Browns fan.
Yes.
And a hell of an all around good guy.
Yes, he certainly is. And again, when you're talking about all around, I'll use the word great. That would be this draft panel that we've been doing for years and years and years. Jason Jones, Chris Galloway, and yours truly, Rick Morris, coming at you for our NFL draft preview. We will, as we have always done, reconvene after the draft is done and see how everything shook out. Gentlemen, I thank you both so much for your time. This was awesome as always, and thank you everybody for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1722.